Most Christians understand the spiritual concept of stewardship, but do we always carry that into practical matters? Next, how we can actually handle the resources God's given us. Well, that's what we're going to attempt to do today to help you connect the dots between faith and finances. First up, however, our host Rob West welcomes Sharon Epps of Kingdom Advisors for her insights on applying God's financial principles to our lives. Now, today's program is not live. We're pre-recorded, but that means we've had a great chance to line up some great calls and questions, too. I'm Steve Moore. Thanks for listening. Let's get Money Wise. Well, Rob, our friend Sharon Epps is not only the Chief Operating Officer at Kingdom Advisors, in charge of training 2,700 financial professionals so they can help their clients follow God's financial finances, but she's also a great co-worker with you, and it's a blessing to have her with us today on the program.
Well, it sure is, and she's up to the task today. Sharon, we're delighted to have you back on MoneyWise Live.
Thanks so much, Rob and Steve. I'm looking forward to diving into this discussion today.
Mm-hmm. Well, we sure are as well. Sharon, perhaps the most foundational biblical financial principle we have to learn as believers is that God owns it all. We talk about it often here on this program. I think it's really one of the big ideas that separates us really from others who perhaps talk about this topic. And it comes from Psalm 24:1, the earth is the Lord's and everything in it. But here's the question. How does that actually connect with the decisions we have to make every day about money?
Well, that's a really great question, and it all flows from this principle that God owns it all. And that gives definition, actually, to my role in life. It makes it clear that I'm not the owner of anything, and I especially love that when something breaks down.
Yeah.
But I'm a manager. I'm a manager, and as a manager, my job is to find out what the owner wants me to do with what he's given me. And, you know, the best question I can ask each day in implementing this God owns it all is, God, what do you want me to do with your money, whether it's which house to buy or even just what to spend on a trip at Target? I think it's a mistake to think that he doesn't care about the little things. Now, that doesn't mean you have to pray for hours about a minor purchase, but I think it does mean that I want to intentionally be a good manager all the time.
Yeah. Well, it's a simple question to ask, Lord, what do you want me to do with your money? But perhaps it's a big idea that really changes everything about how you approach your spending. Is that your experience?
I think it does. And I think that's really the challenge that many people have. They've heard God owns it all the time. But what does that really mean in my daily life? And I think this question can be a bridge to help me understand.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's unpack this a bit further. You were telling me about a recent meeting you had with some pastors as you were teaching on this topic. I'd love for you to share that story. I think it really illustrates this idea well.
Well, let me first start by asking you the question that I asked them. On a scale of 1 to 10, with 1 being never and 10 being all the time, how much does your faith intersect your finances? Now, Rob, I won't make you answer that right now, but these pastors were really, really honest about it. And several of them said, you know, I'm a 4, I'm a 5. I really don't think about faith and finances that much together. And I'm certainly not here to downplay the pastors, but I think it shows that so often our stewardship idea in the church is really relegated to a thought of fundraising. And of course, giving is very important. But God calls pastors to discipleship. And when we understand that our finances are under his lordship, it's just as much discipleship as any other element of growing someone in their faith walk with the Lord. When a family or individuals bring their finances to the Lord, they grow closer to Christ. And every financial decision is a spiritual decision.
You know, that's been my experience as well, is that your money journey is one of the key areas that God uses to shape your faith journey. And I think when we begin to see it that way, when we run our decisions through that lens, we don't say, well, my giving's under God's authority, but everything else is just what I do. It's what I spend money on, and there's a disconnect there. But when we reframe every financial decision and run it through that grid and say, how does God want me to use my money, including how how he wants me to enjoy my money, then I think perhaps we'll approach it quite differently. Well, there's a lot more to unpack on this topic, Steve.
That's right, there sure is. And we will do that right after this brief break. You're listening to MoneyWise Live with Rob West. I'm Steve Moore. Our special guest today is Sharon Epps, talking about faith and finances. Your faith, your finances. Stick around, stay with us. We'll be back with more after this.
Money and life run on the same track, but unfortunately, sometimes it seems like your money is heading in a different direction from your goals. In Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment, author Ron Blue helps you to break down all your financial options to a basic four, and then shows you how to keep it all chugging along in the right direction on the same track. Never Enough, Three Keys to Financial Contentment, available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Our friends at Sound Mind Investing have been helping Christians reach their financial goals since 1990 with step-by-step guidance for investors just getting started, making choices in a 401k, or getting ready for retirement, all grounded in God's Word. The SMI slogan is Financial Wisdom for Living Well. More information is available online at soundmindinvesting.org. The SMI website also includes articles about common money management and investing topics. soundmindinvesting.org.
The humorist Will Rogers once observed that the only time people dislike gossip is when you gossip about them. That's not altogether true. As Christians, we are to avoid gossip at all times, regardless of who it's about. The most concise definition of gossip I've ever seen comes straight from Scripture. In 1 Timothy 5:13, Paul called gossips people who say things which they ought not to say about others. In another place, Paul says our speech ought to be limited to that which builds others up. Today, purpose not to say anything you ought not to say. Work at building people up instead. This is David Jeremiah encouraging you to get on the road to new life. Discover God's good words on Route 66.
Route 66, driving the word home. Log on to Route66Life.com. Start your journey home today.
If the heavy burden of debt is robbing you of freedom and peace of mind, Christian Credit Counselors can help. We're a nationwide nonprofit credit counseling organization that has helped over 300,000 individuals in the last 27 years get out of credit card debt 80% faster while honoring that debt in full. To learn how Christian Credit Counselors can help you, visit ChristianCreditCounselors.org. That's ChristianCreditCounselors.org or call 800-557-1985.
It's always a real pleasure to have you joining us on MoneyWise Live. Today's edition of MoneyWise Live, however, is not actually live. We're pre-recorded. We're out of the office, but we've prepared some material, some calls, some information that we think you will enjoy and find very applicable, practically speaking, obviously, very biblical as well. Joining us today for the first half hour is our good friend Sharon Epps. She happens to be the COO, Chief Operating Officer of Kingdom Advisors. What types of operations do you do, Sharon?
No appendectomies or anything like that, Steve.
Well, see, yeah, because I had a pain on my left side, and they've been telling me probably appendix.
You don't want me to get near it.
Instead, Sharon is actually unpacking a profound principle and really the biggest idea when it comes to managing God's way, and that is God owns it all. But we're getting down to the, so what does that mean to me and how I manage my money on a daily basis? And Sharon, I appreciate how you began to relay that to us, but I'd love for you to unpack that a bit more in the context of Scripture. One of the best-known passages on stewardship is, of course, the parable of the talents in Matthew 25. But I think today you're actually going to look at this from a bit of a different angle, right?
I think so. You know, often when we teach on parable of the talents, we look at the talents themselves and the distribution of the talents, and those are all really great lessons. But I think one of the things that's helpful to do is to step back and say, you know, what was the owner's role in this? Because as we've been talking about, if God is actually the owner of everything, if we look at the parable of the talents with the lens of God's perspective, we begin to learn really new and exciting things about God's role, which then gives us comfort in our role. You know, I think one of the things that we learn is that the owner had enough. He was able to distribute as he wished to every person that he wished to, and he did not run out. And of course, that's a real comfort to know that our God has enough. There's plenty.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it also reminds us that we need to approach our plans loosely. And so let's talk about planning for a moment. It stands to reason that making a plan for our resources is just good management. We talk about that often here on MoneyWise Live. But what happens if he sometimes has a different plan for part of those resources?
Well, my goodness, it certainly happened in my life, and I'm sure it's happened in yours as
Absolutely.
Well. And I think the key is if we're listening to God and we're asking this question, what would you have me do with your money? Then we might plan one direction and he might direct us another. And let me just give a specific example.
Okay.
You might have money saved up for a new car, and God may put it on your heart that someone else needs a car more than you do. And are we willing to answer this question, you know, Lord, what we have you have me do with your money?
Mm.
You may have a certain amount of money set aside for retirement, but he may call you to use that money to pay for your child's education without debt instead. And I think one really important thing to say here is that as we listen to God about what he would have us do with his money, the answer is not always give it away.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that's key. And we can easily get to the place where we just assume that's always going to be the instruction. But again, if we go back to 1 Timothy, remember, God said we're to enjoy what he's given us. And so there's nothing, as Ron Blue has taught for years, nothing more spiritual about giving than taking your family on a vacation if it's done in light of his principles and according to his plan. And I think there is perhaps maybe that concern that if I surrender my finances to Christ, he's going to take everything away from me. But that's really not biblical.
Well, it's not. If we go back to the parable of the talents, God's actually a distributor. He gives things to us. And he repeatedly promises in his word that he will provide for all of our needs. And that doesn't mean he necessarily wants to live a Spartan type existence.
Yeah.
In fact, years ago, I was a budget counselor, and I had many, many couples that would come to see me for the first time. And I was so surprised at the ones that would walk in and say something like, oh, we just wanted to let you know we bought a new car, and we had to do it before we came to see you because we knew you would tell us not to. And what a bad assumption.
Yes. Well, it's exactly right. And so often I think that's where people are at, is that they think, well, if I align my life with God, it's going to just put me in this corner and box me in. I'm not going to be able to live freely. And certainly that can apply to our money as well. And that's just not reality. That's why he gives us principles. He doesn't give us directives in this area that are so specific. And that really takes us back to our knees, Sharon, and causes prayer to become a big part of this, doesn't it?
It absolutely does. And in fact, just to tell you a quick personal story that was a result of prayer, Joel and I had the opportunity to get a small inheritance from his parents when they passed. And we really were asking the Lord, what do you want us to do with your money? And at that point, we had three teenagers in the house. And one of our family goals was that we wanted their friends to be in our home so we could impact them for Christ. And we ended up believing that the Lord wanted us to put in a swimming pool so that our house would be a gathering place. And it worked. And we felt like they were the best dollars we could have spent because we had the opportunity to invest in those teenagers. One little quick caveat, we did learn that we also needed to adjust our food budget along with that purchase to feed all the teenagers.
I can imagine. Well, this is the idea, Sharon, that I know you love to talk about and teach on, and that is connecting meaning to our money, because money is a tool and it's used to accomplish God's purposes in our lives. And when we see it that way, perhaps that's helpful as well.
It really is. And I know, Rob, that you talk about the four things that we can do with our money. We live, we give, we owe, and our grow, and we grow it in investing. And I think, you know, the big question here is, what would God have us do in each of these areas? We often think of that in terms of the giving, but how does it apply to those other areas of our life as well?
Hmm. When you were doing a lot of your counseling, Sharon, was there a common denominator that ran through most of the couples that you chatted with?
Well, that's a whole nother discussion, Steve, but communication has been such a big issue with couples. We all come with a different history, and learning to communicate about money is a big topic.
Well, that is a big concern, obviously. It's hard to manage your money well in a family situation if the communication areas aren't strong. And since that is so multifaceted, Sharon, and you are the expert on this, how about coming back real soon and joining us again, okay?
That would be my pleasure, Steve.
All right. That's Sharon Epp. She's the COO, Chief Operating Officer at Kingdom Advisors, working alongside Rob West on a daily basis, as I have the opportunity to do as well. This is MoneyWise Live. Rob West, I'm Steve Moore. We'll be back with more, not live calls, but pre-recorded calls just for you today. MoneyWise Live, right after this.
Do you know if you have enough? Enough money? Enough house? Do you know how much is enough? If not, Ron Blue can help with his book, Master Your Money, a step-by-step plan for experiencing financial contentment. Learn how to save, invest, and give wisely, how to create a long-term financial plan, and how to get out of debt. You'll find it all in Master Your Money by Ron Blue. Available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hebrews 4:12 says, "For the word of God is quick and powerful and sharper than any two-edged sword." Here's Beth Moore with a quick word.
Glory in both the Old Testament Hebrew and the New Testament Greek. Glory is a term of weight. I want you to hear, I want you not to turn right now, but I'm going to read you 2 Corinthians 4:17 because it describes it in these kind of terms. "For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all." What it's saying is this: if we put all our sufferings in this present lifetime on one side of that scale, and then God drops the glory that he's going to reveal in us on the other side of the scale. I want you to picture, my mind went back to the seesaw at Arkadelphia, Arkansas Primary School many, many years ago that I was forever scared to get on because I was a very scrawny kid and I was always so scared that somehow I was going to get thrown off that seesaw. And I want you to just picture it with me because we really do believe, we think we have been through, some of us have been through some real live suffering, and we put all of that on that one. I mean, and we just see that seesaw. We're all the way down here, and that the other side of it just up there and empty. That's what happens if we do not entrust ourselves to God. That's what we did.
You've been listening to Beth Moore with today's quick word. Beth is dedicated to encourage people to come to know and love Jesus Christ through the study of Scripture. Why wait? Click online today, pick a podcast or television teaching, or both. Just visit BethMoore.org, that's BethMoore.org, or download the Living Proof app. Search for Beth Moore in your app store.
The financial wealth you leave behind could be the best thing that ever happened to your loved ones, or the worst. In Splitting Heirs, giving your money and things to your children without ruining their lives, Ron Blue explains why it's important to make these decisions now, instead of forcing your heirs to do it later. Splitting Heirs will foster a real appreciation for the precious resources that God has entrusted to you. And it's available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
We're MoneyWise Live, an intersection between faith and finances. You hear us daily on this fine radio station, and We're really blessed and honored that you join us. Please don't forget to tell a friend. That would more than likely help them, and it would certainly help us. And we do appreciate you being there today. Rob, you want to take some phone calls?
That sounds great.
Let's do it. Let's jump in by going up to Minneapolis. And Judy, thanks so much for your patience. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a question for you, Rob. Thank you for taking the call, first off.
Sure.
We have an IRA account that has been losing money the last quarter. My question is this. I'm thinking about taking a larger sum out of that account and paying down some expenses.
Yeah.
The reason that we want to do that is to minimize our monthly debt. My husband feels called into the recovery ministry. So we're trying to get our wage or our monthly household debt down as far as we can so that he can afford to take a different job that pays much less so that he can do the work that the Lord's called him to.
Yes. Well, I love the idea that he wants to do God's work. And if God's calling you in that direction, I believe God will provide. I think the question is in what timing and where do we pull the resources from? I certainly like the idea of paring back your expenses and your lifestyle. Certainly debt will do that to keep expenses as low as possible so that you have as little need for income as possible. So he has the freedom and flexibility to do this work. Let's talk, though, about pulling this from the IRA. That's certainly not my first choice. Tell me your age, and then tell me about your retirement savings, this account, and anything else that you have.
Okay, my age is 62 and a half.
Okay.
My husband's age is 57, so he's a monthly earner.
Okay.
I have three retirement accounts. It's a 401k rollover that's providing us with a minimal monthly stipend of about $700.
Okay. And is that money that's being coming out of there, are you making enough to replenish that, or are you seeing that balance decline?
No, that's actually continuing to make money for us. The 401k is.
Okay. All right. And how much is in there?
All in total, about $370,000.
Okay. All right. Very good. And then what other retirement accounts?
The retirement account would be the one that is a little more active, the IRA, and the value of that as of today is like $130,000.
Okay. All right.
And that's the one that I have access to that I would like to take the money out and pay down the debt. It's the two cars.
Okay. And that one's in your name, that IRA?
Yes. All the retirement accounts are in my name. They were in position before my husband and I were married 4 years ago.
I see. And what's the value of the debt you're looking to pay down?
About $15,000.
Okay. All right. Very good. And so you're not currently accessing any income from this $130,000 in the IRA?
No.
Okay.
No, it just stays there and does what it does.
Okay. And are you all both continuing to work?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So you've got a plan that says as you, you know, take Social Security, as you work, as you continue to draw from this 401k, you've got a plan in place where you can cover your expenses in the future at the point you decide to stop working. Have you looked at that?
Not intensively.
Okay.
No.
All right. I think a couple of thoughts here. One is I would go ahead and do that. And if you want the help of a financial professional or even a one of our MoneyWise coaches, I think that would be useful time spent. Just to be looking at with a maybe a finer point on what is it actually going to take to fund our lifestyle in retirement. Let's assume this debt is gone and the cars are paid off and you have no debt. What are your expenses going to be? How much do you have coming in from Social Security? What can you reasonably expect from all of these retirement accounts so that they continue to grow? And I think a good rule of thumb there we use is the 4% rule. So, for instance, on that roughly $370,000, at 4%, you could draw out about $15,000 a year, about $1,250 a month. One of the reasons this money is probably continuing to grow is, first of all, it's been a good market, but but second of all, you're taking considerably less than that at $700 a month. But I'd love for you to have a real good feel for what all of that's going to look like. Now, what about pulling the money from the IRA to pay off the cars? I actually like that idea because you're not going to pay the penalty. You're over 59 and a half. You will have to add it to your taxable income. So just don't let that catch you by surprise and perhaps talk to your tax preparer about what the implications are of that. But then you're going to pare your lifestyle back. That additional monthly expense for those two loans is going to be gone, which means obviously you need less to be able to fund your lifestyle on a monthly basis. So I have no problem with you proceeding with that, but I would take this extra step of doing a little bit more planning just so you all know what are your savings goals and do they match up with the current saving you're doing and your plans for when you plan to pull back on full-time work. And God bless you for the work that you're both doing and the new season of ministry that he's going to have in the days ahead.
We hope that helps you, and we're glad that you called today, Judy. Thanks very, very much. Well, Rob, I think we have time, if you don't mind, to take an email, okay?
Sounds good.
All right, this one is from Ben. He says, "Dear Rob and Steve, we tithe 10% monthly. I tend to wait until the end of the month because our paydays and incomes vary. However, is it biblical to give only once a month, or might that not be giving the first and the best?" And he's referring, obviously, to the Old Testament adage, where you're supposed to give the first, the best, the unblemished to God when people were taking their offerings to the temple. So what
sure.
do you think?
Well, first of all, Ben, I love that you're a giver, and I love that you're applying the principle of the tithe. We would certainly encourage you to do that as a starting point to give to the local church and then give as God has given to you out of your proportion, out of your increase beyond that, even sacrificially. Remember, Jesus raises the bar in the New Testament, and we should have proportionate giving and give cheerfully, of course. Here's the bottom line, though. I really don't think we should need to be legalistic about it. You know, we give because we give out of obedience. We give as an act of worship. And you're waiting to see on a monthly basis how much your increase actually is. And then you're writing that check. I don't think God's heart is that we give that day or that week. I think if you do that monthly, God knows your heart. And I think you're perfectly in line with this principle. So I would say keep at it. Love the fact that you're a giver. And thanks so much for checking in with us. We appreciate it.
Yeah. And that you're being thoughtful about it. Obviously, you want to please God on multiple levels, and we appreciate that, Ben. Thanks so much. If you'd like to send a brief email question to Rob, we'd love to have you do it. The address is questions@moneywise.org. questions@moneywise.org. Back with more after this.
Investing is more than just returns. It's an expression of who you are and what you value. Does the way you invest your money reflect your identity as a Christian? At Eventide, we design investments for performance and a better world, so you can invest with the confidence to reach your financial goals while remaining true to your Christian values and commitments. We call this investing that makes the world rejoice. More is available at investeventide.com. That's investeventide.com.
Christian Healthcare Ministries enables believers to meet their healthcare costs affordably, biblically, and compassionately. It's not insurance, but a voluntary cost-sharing ministry based on the biblical example of Christians sharing each other's needs. And members aren't fined under the law for not having health insurance. Christian Healthcare Ministries might be your health cost solution. Call 800-791-6225 or visit chministries.org.
The Moody Radio Verse of the Week for this Independence Day is found in John 8:34-36. Jesus answered them, "Truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The Son remains forever. So if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed." That's John 8:34-36, the Moody Radio Verse of the Week.
We've all been hurt. We've all hurt others. That's why forgiveness is critical for our spiritual and emotional well-being. But how do you forgive when it's hard? In Forgive Your Way to Freedom, Gil Mertz shares his inspiring story of forgiving his difficult and distant father and lays out a practical, biblical process of forgiveness. Learn to forgive and be set free. Forgive your way to freedom. More at moodypublishers.com.
Your family and your money are two very important subjects. That's why in this month's MoneyWise e-magazine, we're giving your family tips and tools to grow closer to God, closer together, and closer to true financial freedom. Get practical advice to strengthen financial communication in your marriage, infuse more budget-friendly family activities into your week, and a lot more. Your free MoneyWise e-magazine subscription is waiting for you at moneywise.org/signup.
With SRN News, I'm John Scott. With coronavirus infections surging across parts of the U.S., states in the midst of reopening are hitting pause on some plans to lift restrictions. Outbreaks in Florida, Arizona, Texas, and California have already forced those states to take measures to limit crowds and shut down gathering places. New York Mayor Bill de Blasio says the city is delaying its resumption of indoor dining at restaurants, not because of any rise in cases in the city, but because of upticks elsewhere. U.S. companies added nearly 2.4 million jobs in June, the payroll company ADP says small businesses reported the largest gain, adding 937,000 jobs. Stocks finishing mixed on Wall Street, even as gains for technology stocks pushed the NASDAQ to another record close. The Dow off 78 points, but the NASDAQ picked up 95. This is SRN News.
And we're back with you on MoneyWise Live, and it's a real pleasure to have you with us today. Hope you always find something interesting that you can apply to your own personal finances. We find the Bible not only spiritual, if you will, in content, but very practical as well. And that's what we try to do, is marry up those two things as it applies to our personal finances. Let's continue on. Houston, Texas. Elizabeth, tell us your situation.
Yes, sir. I am 51 and part of the oil industry, and I was there at a company for 8-9 years and was one of the unfortunate layoffs and was pulled through after a couple of years, and they hired me back. And what I found where I was applying for jobs is either I was in the middle. I was either super overqualified or way underqualified. Mm-hmm. And so I had the experience, but then not necessarily the education. So when you're online, nowadays you don't meet people. Everything's online.
Right.
So it's really God who, make the connections. It
yes.
has to be the Lord. But as you would apply, you couldn't even get through the first one unless, do you have that degree? Hmm. Do you have that associate's degree or certificate? So being now that I'm back in, I'm wondering if I should take the opportunity to take the money that I was going to do just maybe a class or two at a time, if it meant getting my associate's, do baby steps, or go ahead and take that $6,000 a year, $4,500 a year, and put it directly in retirement.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I think the key here, and I certainly can appreciate what you're saying about being able to get in the door, and especially with the online application process now, a lot of times if you can't qualify with that initial set of requirements, you may not even have the opportunity to convince them of your skill set and how you can add value to the organization. At the same time, although college graduates make more money than high school graduates on average, it is only on average, and so it in no way guarantees you'll make more money than you would without one. I think, Elizabeth, the key here is to really have a plan that's fairly specific in terms of what industry do you want to head into, is there going to be a requirement for this degree, and then make sure that you do your homework with regard to what is necessary to be able to get in the door, and is the money that you are looking for going to be there. Clearly, if this is a barrier to entry, both for what you're passionate about doing, you're gifted and wired to do, and the ability to secure the job in the first place, then it's pretty important that you have that. But I would just make sure that's the case as you think through this, and not spend all of this money to get a degree without a really clear plan and an understanding that that is, in fact, necessary. When you go to payscale.com and you search for the highest paying two-year degrees, you might be surprised what you find. And, you know, there are plenty of opportunities and occupations that have a great starting salary that increase fairly rapidly. And so if you haven't already done it and you don't have real clarity about where you're headed, I would just consider perhaps taking a career assessment or a strengths finder. But at the end of the day, as long as you're not borrowing a lot of money and going into debt to get this degree, if in fact you have some clarity about where you're headed, where God is leading with your occupation, and the requirement to have the four-year degree, then I think there's certainly no problem with that. In fact, I would certainly say you're not too old to go back to school. I just want to make sure that you have a plan that requires it.
Mm. And, you know, I would hope and think that Elizabeth's background in the industry would compensate for her not having an associate's, but because you're applying online these days, sometimes that's really the entry point, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's so important to recognize how important your network is. And so whether it's connecting through your local church, using LinkedIn, building some relationships, and exploring who you know that can help you get in the door is always really important.
All right. Let's take another call up to Zeeland, Michigan, and we welcome Jack.
Hey, guys. Love your show, by the way. I listen quite frequently.
Thank you, Jack. I appreciate your kind words. That means a lot to Steve and I when we hear from listeners. How can we help you today?
So, all right, I've just hit the magic 65 number, and I don't know if it's magic, but it sure has paused me to think about my own mortality. My wife and I are about roughly the same age. She'll be 65 in a couple of weeks, and so here's the conversation we've had with several friends and others who are in the know, but I'd really like your take on you know, when do we start drawing Social Security? I mean, I'm gonna work for a few more years yet. But and I hear the things, well, you know, it's going to take 8 to 10 years if you wait, and otherwise, but you get, I know there's a straight 8% increase every year if you don't. And I spoke with someone recently who said, you know, I just hit 70, now I'm starting to take my Social Security, that's the way to go. So, you know, it's just kind of a, what do we do?
Yeah. Well, I think it's a question that we all need to wrestle with. I mean, at face value, Jack, we like the idea of waiting if you can, meaning perhaps if you're continuing to work or you have other income sources that you're relying on, either guaranteed income sources like a pension or you're living off of, you know, savings. If you don't need this money and you're able to cover your lifestyle, the ability to have a guaranteed 8% return is a good thing, because you're certainly not going to find that in the market. And, you know, we recognize that once you reach age 65, you know, your life expectancy will increase. Again, these are the averages, but it will increase to about 83 years old. And in fact, one out of four will live well into their 90s. And so I think, you know, that's the big idea here, is that if we can wait and collect that higher check. And if you're married, your spouse would have the ability then beyond your life to get the survivor's benefits based on that higher check amount as well. And so for those reasons, again, assuming you can make it work, I like the idea of banking that guaranteed 8% return. And, you know, that requires that you're in good health. And none of us obviously knows the future, only the Lord does. But just on paper, you know, we like the idea of waiting if you can make it work.
I like that. Well, I appreciate that.
All right, Jack. Well, thanks for calling. God bless you.
Mm. Yeah, we appreciate that call very much. Thanks, Jack. And I think we can squeeze in one more. Let's try Hinsdale, Illinois. And Lisa, you have a credit card question, huh?
I do. Thanks for taking my call.
Yes.
So I'm curious. Right now I use a credit card that doesn't have any fees, that bounces around on 5% cash back on certain things throughout the year. And I'm curious, with credit cards and their fees, have you guys done research on which are the best? And do you think it's wrong to pay a fee initially on opening one if the benefits are worth it? And I pay it off each month. So I'm just curious on what credit card I can get the most rewards from.
Yeah. Well, a couple of thoughts. Number one, as long as you are paying it off every month, I don't have a problem with you using a credit card. Here at MoneyWise Live, we don't say never use a credit card. We just say credit cards are a tool, and we need to make sure that we're using them according to biblical principles and in a way that furthers our financial life. And so paying it off is certainly a way to do that. Let me give you two websites, and then I'll give you two ideas on credit cards. The first one is cardratings.com, cardratings.com. The second one is nerdwallet.com, nerdwallet.com. They, both of those sites regularly update the best cards, and it's always changing, so I would check those out. A couple that I'm familiar with, Fidelity Rewards, they have a great credit card right now that offers 2% cash back unlimited on every eligible purchase, and so you don't have to fit it into a certain category, which can be problematic. The other one is the American Express Blue Cash Reward Card. I would prefer you have no annual fee, but I would also look for whether or not you're going to really maximize the benefit of those certain categories, and I'd rather you have a higher overall cash back.
Lisa, we hope that information helps you. Great question. Thanks very much. John's in Portland, Oregon. We'll speak with him right after this.
Many people are experiencing financial challenges, such as credit card debt, downsizing, dead-end jobs, and depleted savings. In fact, more than half of all divorces are the result of financial pressures at home. But there's hope. In Your Money Counts, biblical financial expert Howard Dayton shows that the Bible is a veritable blueprint for managing your finances, and you'll discover the profound impact it has on your relationship with God. Your Money Counts is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Hi, I'm Barry McGuire. I'm a car guy here to help you understand the urgency and how fun it is to share your faith at every opportunity. In case you haven't noticed, the world's in chaos and almost everyone is living in fear. And when people are living in fear, they tend to run to God. And for every Christian who knows God, that's opportunity knocking. Don't miss this incredible opportunity to let your light shine in the darkness. People are desperately seeking the peace and happiness that God has given you to give away at every opportunity, allowing everyone to see God's love through you and want what you have. I promise you, lives will be changed when they see God's love flowing through you to them. You'll be amazed how fast people tell you their deepest needs when they sense you really know God and that your love for them is real. Those are divine encounters, and you can have them every day if you want them. God wants them. There is nothing more exciting than knowing God is using you to lead people to Him. Join us at IgniteAmerica.com.
This is Max McLean. Listen to the Bible from Psalm 1. Blessed is the man who does not walk in the counsel of the wicked, or stand in the way of sinners, or sit in the seat of mockers, but his delight is in the law of the Lord. And on his law he meditates day and night. He is like a tree planted by streams of water, which yields its fruit in season, and whose leaf does not wither. Whatever he does prospers. Not so the wicked. They are like chaff that the wind blows away. Therefore the wicked will not stand in the judgment, nor sinners in the assembly of the righteous. For the Lord watches over the way of the righteous, but the way of the wicked will perish. From Psalm 1. Listen to the Bible. It's great for the soul.
To hear more, go to radiobible.org.
Many people adopt an attitude toward marriage and finances that it'll all work out somehow, but sadly, it often doesn't. Financial woes can devastate a marriage, but there is a better way. God's Way. Money and Marriage God's Way by Howard Dayton will help you discover God's approach to growing your finances, strengthening your relationship with your mate, and cultivating godly joy. Money and Marriage God's Way is available when you click the store button at moneywiselive.org.
Thanks so much for being with us today for another edition of MoneyWise Live. Rob and I always enjoy ourselves when we're here. The hour flies by. It's nice to talk with people all around the country, coast to coast. And speaking of credit cards, we were talking about credit cards with the last caller.
Yeah.
I have another. I'm just tossing it out there. It works for me. You know, another recommendation for credit cards. If your CD gets caught in your CD player in your car,
You put the credit card right in there underneath it, and then it kicks it right out.
Yeah.
Kicks you right out.
Yeah. Do people have CD players in their cars still?
One person does. All right. Portland, Oregon. Hello, John. Thanks for holding, buddy. What's on your mind today?
Well, first let me say, guys, you know what? I am just so blessed by your program. To me, it's like having two Christian financial pros at my disposal every Monday through Friday at 3 o'clock. So thank you guys for doing this.
You're talking about our program?
Your program, yeah. And actually, I do have a CD player in my car.
I got a
2007 Toyota Yaris, actually, and I'm going to use that because sometimes those CDs do get stuck in there.
They do. You know? I have an 08 Mazda 3. We should drag race sometime.
Yes. That'd be a lot of fun. and some of the roads up here, too. I would say not only drag race, but I got some really good twists and turns up here in Portland. We can really have a good time.
You realize the police are listening, and all of this is illegal activity. So we better...
Yeah, but they can't prove it, so it's okay.
Oh, John. Oh,
wow.
I tell you what, let's call you Frank instead. All right, Frank, let's get to your question, buddy.
All right, guys. Okay, really quick. So, I'm 45 years old, all right, and I'm married. We don't have any kids, but I would say that we live a comfortable life, all right? We don't, we're not living check to check. You know, we're not well off in any way. You know, we tithe to our church and we have enough to, you know, buy whatever, maybe take a trip here and there. My question is, with how we live our lives right now, what should we expect when we do reach retirement? I mean, I hear all these different stories like, oh, you have to start saving right now because if you don't, you'll have nothing to live on. How much of that is true from your opinion, and what can we do now to help that?
Yeah, well, I think the key is, you mentioned, you're not well off, but you're in a decent shape financially. You know, we always go back to the basics and just say, let's make sure we're taking these things in priority order, because there's competing priorities. There's limited resources with unlimited possibilities on where you're going to allocate these resources. And so we want to have that emergency fund in place, 3 to 6 months expenses. We want to have credit card debt paid off, consumer debt eventually paid off, ultimately the house, which being completely debt-free, including the home heading into retirement, is obviously going to be a major step toward keeping your lifestyle in check during that season. Then for retirement, with time on our side, we want to be putting away 10 to 15% of our income into some sort of company-sponsored retirement account or an IRA, starting with the matching money and then perhaps pivoting to a Roth IRA. Now, let me just pause there. Are you on track with most of those pieces that I just mentioned?
No, I mean, not really. I mean, we are trying to save. We have some in the bank, but we don't, I don't think it's that extreme right now, but those are some good points. I mean, we do have at both of our jobs, you know, we're putting into a, I believe it's either a 401k, and I think they do match it to a certain extent. So we got that. But I guess my main question is, you know, if we would just roll on like we're doing right now, how much of a wake-up call is that going to be when we retire?
Yeah. Well, it's always going to be a function of how much income do you need available to fund your lifestyle. And I think that's the question you need to have now, both in terms of how much you're saving as well as what kind of expenses you have, what kind of lifestyle you're living today. Remember, the principle is the longer term the perspective, the better the financial decision today. And so if you know that you need whatever that amount is saved, a rule of thumb would be 8 to 10 times your income, your pre-retirement income in the bank that could then be invested to supplement guaranteed income sources like Social Security, then how are you doing toward that end? And that 10 to 15% of income into retirement accounts is just a rule of thumb that's going to help you get there. Now, if you're a bit behind, you may need to accelerate that. At age 45, you know, a rule of thumb would say you should probably have about four times your annual salary already put away in retirement accounts. Now, you may say, well, I'm not anywhere close. Well, that's okay, but we just need to get started and do what you can, and that's always going to be a function of starting with that spending plan to say, where do I need to cut back so I can free up more margin that I can use to accelerate my long-term savings and not forsake the other needs that I have, including my giving that I'm doing, starting with the local church and you know, any other lifestyle expenses and other savings goals that you have that are a little bit more near term. So I think it's got to start, John, with that budget to say, what do we need to do today so that we can get to where we want to go? And it may be, and this would just be my last thought, it may be that you need to hire a financial professional, so a retirement planner who can help you look at how much do we actually need based on the lifestyle we have and the sources of income we expect. And what is it going to take on a monthly and an annual basis between now and retirement to get there? And then you at least know what you're shooting for. It's not just this kind of dart against the wall. And that'll give you a little bit more peace of mind to know that you have a plan that you're working toward.
Can we send John a book, perhaps, that would help him, he and his wife? Is that
sure, yeah. I think Master Your Money from Ron Blue would be a great resource that would help him think through
I love it. John, you stay on the line. We'll get your contact info, and we'll send out a copy of Master Your Money. Thanks so much for calling. We enjoyed speaking with you. Wear your seatbelt. Drive safely. Atlanta, Georgia. Danielle, what's on your heart today? How can we help you?
Hey, Rob. Hey, Steve.
Hi.
My question for you guys is, when is the right time to buy a house? My husband and I, we are in our mid-20s. We have a decent savings account. We have about probably collectively $45,000 or so in debt. And probably within the next year or two, we're looking to expand our living quarters. So do you recommend getting an apartment that truthfully the rental payments are like a mortgage payments, or should we start looking into a house? What are your thoughts?
Yeah. Well, I love that you're asking this question before you just kind of plow into making what will likely be one of the largest purchases you ever make. And so I think the key is, you know, when we get married and we're in our 20s, we immediately think, I got to buy a house. That's the next step. And yet what we say is we like home ownership, but we also don't want you to stretch and put this extra burden and a major debt kind of hanging over your head, even though it may feel like you're throwing money away on rent. Going too soon into a purchase like a home purchase just creates some unnecessary stress in your marriage. So run through those numbers again for me in terms of what savings do you have and then how much debt do you have?
Sure. We probably have savings about $10,000 and then college debt about $45,000.
Okay. And are you actively saving right now? How much do you have extra on a monthly basis?
Every single month, we always put $1,000 in.
Okay, I like that. That sounds good. And are you living on a spending plan?
Yeah, we have a budget.
Okay, very good. And are you actively contributing toward retirement before you get to that $1,000 left over?
Yes, that comes out before we even receive our paychecks. Yeah.
Good. And do you know whether it's upwards of 10% of your pay, or is it less than that?
Oh, that's a good question. I believe I can speak on behalf of myself. I'm not 100% sure about my husband.
Okay.
I know I put in probably about 5%.
Okay. All right.
And then that's also matched.
Okay, great. Well, all in, I'd like for you all to have 10 to 15% of your total pay going into retirement. If it's a little bit less than that, that's fine. But and you can include the match in that. But that's what I'd like for you to have going into retirement. So I like the direction you're headed. I like that you've kept your lifestyle low and you've got $1,000 a month extra. As you think about the house that you can afford that would give you a payment of no more than 25% of your take-home pay, do you know how much you'd be looking to spend on this home purchase?
I do not.
Okay.
We're just in the brainstorming phases, okay. So I apologize. I don't have more.
No, that's fine. So let me just give you some ideas here in terms of as you begin to process this. Number one, let's try to get the overall retirement contributions, including matches, up to 10%, okay? Next, I would look at first of all, what kind of home can you afford to buy so that after your down payment of 20%, and that's going to be our savings goal, that your resulting payment on the mortgage would be no more than 25% of your take-home pay, including principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. And that's going to give you a number that says, here's what we can afford after the down payment. That's also going to tell you how much your savings goal is, because if that's a $100,000 home, you need $20,000. If it's a $150,000 home, you're going to need $30,000, and you're not quite there yet. So I would say your next step is to, in fact, look toward renting, set a goal of having saved that 20% down payment after you get to 3 months in your emergency fund, and then you know exactly what you're looking for. And once you're there, now we can go out and start looking for the house. And even if you still have some of the college loans in place, I'm okay with you going ahead with the home purchase as long as you follow those rules, 20% down and a payment of no more than 25% of your take-home pay.
So, Rob, for a young couple or a couple like Danielle and her husband, and they're just sort of getting started, it really does pay to have some patience, to put a lot of prayer into this and not move too quickly. You can really get in over your head, especially with student loan debt, right?
Yeah, we have this belief that houses just always appreciate. But when you look at 2008, 2009, if you were to buy a home with no money down, Right. Now all of a sudden you're upside down and you have the weight of that kind of bearing down on you. That's what I want you to avoid.
Well, the weight bearing down on us right now is the clock. We unfortunately are out of time. We've had a ball today. Hope you've enjoyed the program. Hope you've heard something you found helpful, and that you come back and join us again. For Rob West, I'm Steve Moore. Thanks so much for being there. My thanks to our production team, Amy and Judy and Rich and Jim and all the folks behind the scenes that push all the buttons that make us sound better than we really are. Thanks again for listening. Enjoy the rest of your day and join us again next time.